You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to Feeding Horses, sponsored by Tribute. Today, we are talking all about hay with our guest, Carrie Williams. Dr. Williams is the Equine Extension Specialist and Interim Director of the Equine Science Center at Rutgers University in New Jersey, where she focuses on equine nutrition, exercise physiology, and management practices that promote horse health and performance. With an MS and a PhD in animal science with an equine nutrition focus from Virginia Tech, Dr. Williams has become a respected expert in the field, contributing significantly to research and education in equine science. Her work includes developing educational programs for horse owners and professionals, conducting research on equine nutrition, and advising on best practices for horse care. Dr. Williams is also actively involved in outreach, helping to bridge the gap between scientific research and practical horse management. As a hobby, she currently is training her 9-year-old sport horse Palmer for dressage and eventing. Welcome, Dr. Carrie Williams, and thank you for joining us on Feeding Horses.
Thank you very much for the invite.
Well, we are talking about hay today, and hay is such a big topic, and we're going to just jump right into the questions and see what we can learn. Why is hay such a crucial part of a horse's diet?
Yeah, and that's a great place to start, because horses are grazers. And yeah, people think, well, grazing is grass. Well, grass is a forage and hay is forage. So they really need to be eating, we say, about 16 to 18 hours of their day. So if you think about it, that's about 2/3 of their day. And in order to do that, we need things that are more fibrous, that take longer for them to eat, that take longer to digest, and that can't be consumed too quickly. Because if you think about eating a grain meal, some horses can woof it down in, you know, seconds. Yeah. So we really need to try to make a feed component that is going to last them their entire day or their entire grazing period.
What do horse owners commonly misunderstand about hay, or what have you seen any kind of mistakes in regards to hay?
I think the biggest thing is they don't realize how much quality hay matters. Mm. They think it doesn't matter the quality of the hay because I can add whatever I need with the grain. Or, well, the grain is really the important thing and that's what has the nutrients in it. The hay doesn't have nutrients in it. It's just filler or it's just fiber. And that is so wrong. And I'm sure a lot more of what we cover in the next 20 or 30 minutes is going to explain why that matters. And why really good quality hay should be on the top of your list and not just hay in general.
Right. Well, so grass hay is probably the most common types of hay being fed to them. But there are within grass hay, there are lots of different types of grass hay, like Timothy, orchard grass, Bermuda, Tifton, Teff, and so on and so on. What are some of the nutritional differences between them, or are they very similar?
So that's a great question, but I need to break it up a little bit differently first.
Okay.
So you mentioned a bunch of different types of hay, or
right,
what we call species of hay. But really within those you listed, there are two different classifications. There's the cool season grasses. And the first two, the Timothy and the orchard grass hay you mentioned, are two different types. Brome is also another cool season type, tall fescue. And I can go on because I'm in New Jersey and that's what we feed is a cool season hay.
Right.
Some of the others fall under the warm season grass hay category. And those are like your Bermudas. So they either called coastal, Tifton is another variety, and Teff is a warm season hay as well. So when you take those two different categories of grasses and of hays, the main difference is going to be, and this is talking about all of them, the main difference is going to be their carbohydrate sources and the type of carbohydrates. So when we talk about non-structural carbohydrates or more of the sugars and the starches in the hay, they're going to be very different between the cool or the warm season. Cool season grass hays will store more of the sugars and the fructans. That's a fancy word for just strings of fructose instead of strings of glucose like starches. However, in the warm season haze, you're not going to get those storage capacities. It's a different way of photosynthesizing. So typically, and for those who do have these metabolic horses and are very concerned about this, you're looking for more of the warm season haze to be your lower non-structural carbohydrate haze, just because in the way they store their carbohydrates. And that's the main difference.
Okay.
You can get into differences based on a lot of different things with environmental factors and different cuttings and the way it's baled and all of that. But really, in terms of cool season versus warm season within those categories, there aren't a whole lot of differences between those hays.
Yeah. I used to live in, well, Maryland or Pennsylvania and fed the cool season grasses. And when I moved to Florida, it's a very different situation. I mean, some people will still feed those, but they are not local hays for the most part. But the coastal hays are so much more common down here.
Very common. And I know we have a lot of people up here in the Northeast that are like, oh, they're so lucky down there. They can get the warm season haze. And then I hear just the opposite from my counterparts in Florida. Oh, you're going to be so lucky. You can really get some good quality cool season haze. So, and again, I know this is opening a huge can of worms for future questions, but it depends on the horse you're feeding.
Sure. Yeah. And you always want what you don't have, right? Isn't it? There's a reason why they say the grass is always greener. Yeah, exactly. So then beyond the grass haze, we have the legume haze, most notably alfalfa is certainly the most common one. And how does that differ from the grass haze nutritionally?
Yeah, so that is that third category. So alfalfa, as everybody knows, but also you can put in clover and trefoil haze sometimes fall in there too. They're not as common, but they are.
Yeah.
They're going to be your more nutrient dense hay. So along, you know, nutrients is a very general term, but protein is going to be higher. Calcium is going to be higher. Typically, all the minerals are going to be a little bit higher. You're also going to have more calories. So it's going to be more energy dense. So that's why you can't really feed a one-to-one. You can't go 100% off of a 100% grass hay diet onto 100% alfalfa diet, because there's going to be a lot more calories in there. So it's not good for all the horses. But those are usually the three things. Calorie dense, protein, and calcium seem to be the main ones.
Yeah. So we have all these different types of hays, and you mentioned there are a lot of other factors that can determine the nutrient quality and quantity, I guess, but also cuttings, right? Different cuttings of hay can have a lot to do with that. How are the different cuttings impact the hay?
Yeah, and that's a question I get all the time. So before I talk about cutting, let me explain maturity.
Okay.
Cutting and maturity don't always go hand in hand,
right?
And they can be very different things. So maturity of the hay is basically as the grass, even in your lawn, grows, it becomes more mature. Okay, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Well, as the grass grows, it gets taller. And as grass gets taller, it needs to put up a stronger stem in order to sustain its upright, you know, its upright stature. So what that means is as the stem grows taller, it needs more fiber to stay more erect or straight and tall. So more mature grasses have longer and more stems and therefore more fiber. So we say there's an inverse relationship between the amount of fiber in a grass and the amount of protein, because something has to go. You know, there's 100%. You know, and everything. You can't go with 110%.
Right.
So as you get closer to a higher percentage in fiber, something needs to go. And that's typically protein, some of the other nutrients as well. But it's kind of that protein or fiber and protein are in this inverse relationship. You're also going to have less leaves in a more mature hay, and the leaves are really where a lot of the vitamins, a lot of the minerals, a lot of the protein lie as well. So as you start growing seed heads and bigger stems, which means more mature, just the nutrient content and the quality, and let's use this as quality, goes down.
Yeah.
So what happens with cuttings? So now let's go back to your cutting question. First cutting hays, farmers like to let grow as long as they can because it's early in the season. One, weather might also not cooperate, but as the grass is growing, they want to allow those stems to get bigger so they can get a bigger yield out of their fields. So the bigger the stems, the more grass they have, the more they can bale. So they're going to typically leave those in a little bit longer. And when they cut them, they're going to be more fibrous. Then say a second cutting, they typically won't leave in the ground as long because it's not, they're not putting up as big of stems. It's usually more leafy, and they'll cut it a little bit earlier so that they can try to get a third cutting in, which is even leafier and even less mature.
Yeah.
So typically the first cutting is going to be lower in maturity than the second, than the third. But also it does depend a little bit on maturity when it's grown. So if they leave that, say weather is another factor and you get a whole lot of rain at the end of the summer or when they want to bail that second cutting, they're not going to be able to get off the ground. And then they have a very mature second cutting. It might almost be equal to the first. That's kind of what happened here in the Northeast last year.
Yeah.
We had a very wet end of our season. A lot of farmers didn't get their second cutting off when they wanted to. It was pushed really, really late. While most farmers, if they have a very good traditional year, the second cutting is going to be more nutrient dense than the first. And then the third is going to be even better if we can even get a third. I know some parts up here and some years we don't even get a third cutting. But it will depend. It also depend on the farmer. Everybody has a little bit different way of doing things. So that could vary as well, depending on the farmer. If you get your hay from the same guy, the same farmer, he does it the same way every year, it's probably a little more consistent. However, you know, the sun is in a different, you know, different place. Every day is different. Yeah. Rain is different. So there's a lot of things that go into it. Hopefully the farmer's a good weatherman as well and they don't cut it right before it rains.
Yeah.
But sometimes, oops, it happens.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, if hay is down in a field and drying and it gets rained on, you know, think of all those water soluble, which are also the non-structural carbohydrates. Some of those might leach out. So you're actually going to have a lower NSC hay.
Okay.
But if it does it several times over and gets rained on a lot more, it might actually start to take out some of those minerals as well, because some of the minerals are also water soluble.
Yeah.
So drying time is a big factor as well.
Well, then as a horse owner, how do you, and I know this is very, I know the answer is it depends on the horse, but speaking in generalities, how can you decide what type of hay, what cutting of hay is best for your horse?
Mm-hmm. So I can kind of generalize in three categories. So my first category is going to be an exercising horse, and I'm not going to be discipline specific, just anything that needs a little more nutrients, calories, energy, et cetera, whatever. Then I would start to look for second cutting, maybe third, but second cutting would be good. Cool season grass shouldn't matter at this time because, again, we're just this average, you know, healthy horse that's exercising.
Yeah.
You know, look for a you know, good quality second cutting grass hay. You know, that's going to give it, you know, decent nutrients, decent amount of calories. You still, depending on the horse, might need to add something extra to it to give it a little bit more what it needs for whatever level of exercise you have. But it should be good. Then we've got the other end of the spectrum, the, you know, fat little pony or draft horse.
Yeah.
That's not doing anything. Don't waste your money on the second or third cutting. They can get by with the first cutting and probably not need anything else.
Yeah.
Granted, I would love to see everybody do a hay test, send in a sample and find out really what's in there. A lot of hays, that would be 100% of that animal's needs and they would need nothing else. Other hays, I find sometimes the copper and zinc might be a little deficient. So they might want to add in a, you know, a balancer pellet or a ration balancer in with those. But it's something that doesn't have any calories on top of that. So that would be for that horse. And then you can always throw in that metabolic syndrome horse. And granted, that covers anywhere from underweight and needs more calories, but no sugar, to the overweight, or, you know, the other way, overweight and doesn't need more calories. So they can go all over, but really it's that non-structural carbohydrate content that you're looking at. And in that case, I would steer more towards, you know, warm season grass hays if you could get them.
Mm-hmm.
Alfalfa is not a bad thing either, especially if you have one of these metabolic syndrome horses that's underweight and exercising. I come across those more and more every day. You know, alfalfa is good. It doesn't store the fructans and the non-structural carbohydrates like the cool season grasses do.
Okay.
So it would be appropriate in that sense too. So really look at what your horse is doing and what its needs are. And then you can better match the hay. And again, notice I didn't mention orchard grass versus Timothy versus, because to me, Orchardgrass and Timothy are basically the same hay to me. I look at a lot of other variables, and it's going to be the nutrient quality that is primary to me.
Okay. And so when we've decided what type of hay we're going to feed, how do we decide how much of it to feed?
So this is great. And again, I can start off at this like average level and then we can adjust from there. Right. So the average horse needs 2% of its body weight per day, period. That's a good starting place. If you get a horse from a rescue or wherever, you have no idea about it, you know, and I love using easy math. So let's say it's 1,000 pounds. You can start with 20 pounds of hay. Start there. That's 100% of their diet, 20 pounds of hay. If it's going to start doing exercise, you know, get this, you know, average, you know, or good quality, second cutting, whatever, 20 pounds of hay. And then you adjust from there. The horse is going to be exercising or is a little bit hard keeper. You can add more or you can add in a grain or something else from there. If it's fat or an easy to keep draft horse or pony, or and I keep using those, but there's also some light breeds too, you know, the Morgan and quarter horse are good ones to throw in there. A lot of warm bloods too. You might not need to go with that 2% of their body weight. You might want to be able to bring it down a little. You should never go less than 1.5% of the body weight in forage, however. Okay. So with that being said, you know, again, it's good to get even a weight estimate on the horse, you know, use a weight tape, get an estimate. If it's that 1,000-pound horse, you never want to go less than 15 pounds of hay. And then from there, you can adjust. Again, you can add in forage substitutes. You know, I love talking about those as additional factors. If you don't want to go the commercial grain route, there's a lot of, you know, cubes and chaffs and pellets and a lot of that stuff out there that could be added, because I know there's a lot of parts of the country that can't get good long-stem hay, especially different times of year. And I would start looking for cubes first before anything else. And then work from there. So it's always good to know your horse. And then weigh things, you know, don't go by the flake. I've seen flakes weigh 2 pounds. I've seen flakes weigh 8 pounds.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's such a big variety.
Yeah.
Just get a bathroom scale and stick a muck tub on it, you know, and weigh it from there, or a kitchen scale. You know, I have a cheap Walmart kitchen scale, you know, that I weigh things on as well. And you can at least get an average flake and then calculate from there. Or if you do have a big scale, you know, weigh your bale and then figure out from there, you know, how much a half bale is or a quarter bale.
Yeah.
But it's at least good to get an idea of weight of what you're feeding.
And how does pasture, you know, horses, if horses are out on pasture as well and eating grass, whether it's, you know, a few hours a day, all day, whatever it is, does that factor into that 2% of hay, or do they get that 2% of hay and their pasture?
So it should be factored in, because otherwise that's when you're going to have horses become overweight, because some of them don't stop at that 2%. They don't know.
No.
They don't have that number in their head.
No.
Okay, that's 2%. I need to stop. You know, there's been studies done that even ponies can eat up to 5.5% of their body weight. That's tremendous. That's huge.
Yeah.
Most light horses are going to be around 3. That's going to be kind of their max, especially in forage. But yeah, pasture should absolutely play a role. Typically, if it's good pasture, you know, and I know good, what is everybody's
right,
good?
What is good?
Well, we say, you know, 70% vegetative cover and at least 6 to 8% or 6 to 8 inches in height. So if you have something that's not overgrazed, and they're eating it, it could be in a 24-hour period, that could be their 2% of body weight. So then we would adjust from there. If you're turning them out half the day and it's 12 hours, think, okay, my 1,000-pound horse is going to eat about 10 pounds of forage outside, so I need to give it 10 pounds of forage inside.
Yeah.
You can kind of do that math. The way you can't do that math is when you're using the restricted grazing to try to keep your horse on a diet.
Okay.
So if you only turn them out for, say, 4 hours a day, but then you restrict feed them inside, they can compensate. There's actually great research from a colleague of mine at North Carolina State that found that a horse that goes outside, that's restricted inside and then goes outside for 4 hours, can eat about 70% of its nutrient needs in 4 hours. So they learn. Like, I'm going to wait and I'm going to go out and that's all I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it fast. So you can kind of play the math based on the hours and the percentage of the day, but it's not always the case.
Yeah.
That's what I like to say. And, you know, if you have an overgrazed field where the grass is only an inch or two tall and they're outside for 4 hours, it's not going to be the same. They're not going to get that same amount.
Sure.
But it should factor in at least a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So you were, you talked a little bit about alfalfa, but what types of horses, generally speaking, do well being fed some alfalfa, or what types of horses may not, maybe shouldn't get the alfalfa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thanks for circling back to that, because I think the class of horses I haven't brought up are those, I just throw into the lump of reproducing. So whether they're pregnant, lactating, or growing, those are the three that I put into that category, should absolutely have some sort of alfalfa. Late gestation mares, kind of in their last trimester, absolutely lactating mares, depending on when you wean. Usually it's within 6 months, so it should be 6 months after foaling. And then horses within their first year of birth. It doesn't have to be 100% of alfalfa, but at least should be something in their diet. They need very high protein during that time. Mm-hmm. And it's all because the skeletal development of that young growing foal needs high protein. I want to say maybe 20 years ago, there was this myth that protein caused developmental issues in growing horses.
Yeah.
Well, they actually found it wasn't the protein, it's the imbalance of the minerals that was the problem. So while it might not have been high protein, it was just that the mineral balance was off. So what I always say, or they were growing too quickly and they had too many calories. So I always say, you know, you can still, and restrict, I use lightly, you know, from them having, especially some of these, you know, the warm blood or the really fast growing horses, you can still calorie restrict them without protein restricting them. You know, and then I would always recommend just work with a nutritionist to balance the minerals. It's super complicated. Yeah. But those are kind of the three horses that I would say that category of horse should have some sort of alfalfa.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw the performance horse in there that does a lot of exercise, especially one that might be a little bit more finicky about his hay. I see alfalfa is a great way to get a horse to eat hay that might not be really liking hay a whole lot. They're just like, nah, give me my grain and maybe I'll pick at the hay a little bit. But, you know, you add in an alfalfa mix or some sort of alfalfa and it'll get them to eat more.
Yeah.
So those are my definitely good fours. The definitely nots, anything obese. Or fat, anything you're trying to restrict calories on, because alfalfa is so high in calories, they do not need alfalfa. You know, yeah, there's some that cross over as, yeah, but they're a performance horse, but yet they're fat. Well, get the calories off of, get the weight off of them first, and then you can add in something. You know, I think the misnomer is that anything with metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, et cetera, shouldn't have it, but that's not the case either. Again, it depends. If it's obese, I agree, no.
Yeah.
But if it's not obese, if it's in that metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance category that isn't obese, alfalfa is a good option because it doesn't accumulate the non-structural carbohydrates.
Well, that is all really good information, and we appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. But we have one more question for you that we will do in our next segment, Viral Ideas, Real Horses.
When it comes to feeding your horse, consistency matters, but so does knowing when to improve. At Tribute Equine Nutrition, formulas aren't changed often. As a fixed formula brand, they only make updates when new research shows that they can make a meaningful difference, whether that's improving digestibility, optimizing nutrient absorption, or better supporting the horse's overall health and performance. That's why Equine Nutrition is upgrading every formula in their lineup, building on improvements made to their bestsellers and rolling those advancements out across 2026. And to mark the rollout, Tribute has added a little excitement. Golden tickets, worth up to a year's supply of feed for one horse, have been placed in random bags as the updated formulas are released. For anyone wondering where to start, Tribute's team offers a free personalized feeding plan tailored to each horse's needs. They'll guide owners through the process, and for those new to Tribute, the first bag is shipped right to their door for free. To get started, visit TributeEquineNutrition.com and click Get a Feed Plan. Tell them Feeding Horses sent you. Since today's conversation has been focused on hay, our Viral Ideas Real Horses topic is
also about hay. And we all love the look of green hay. I mean, who doesn't? It looks wonderful. And as a result, I think a lot of people often assume that green hay equals better quality hay. So the question is that true? And then follow-up question is, what can owners realistically evaluate by the eye?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And yes, I know I get that all the time. You put three different bales in front of someone and they say, mm-hmm. the green one is the best one.
Yeah.
So I can go back to earlier in the podcast where we talked about maturity. So it really depends on if you look at this leaf versus stem ratio, and if there's a hay that is really green, but yet has a lot of stems in it, it's not going to be the same quality as something that might be a little browner. Maybe it's sun bleached just on the outside, but you open it up and, oh, look at how green it is in between the flakes or on the inside.
Yeah.
And it's really nice and leafy. So I think there's, and this is kind of going right into that next question, is what can they do to evaluate it? Don't discount the brown hay right away until you look at it. You know, sometimes farmers will let them, you know, if you're going to a farm to buy it, you know, pop a bale. If they don't, you know, see if you can get in between the flakes and like pry it open and see what's down inside of there. Because if it is green, then it's just the outer surface that might have gotten sun bleached or right. any UV light. And then you're only affecting the outside and you're only affecting the vitamins on the outside. Most things don't denature in UV light like vitamins do. Vitamins would be the one thing. But if it's not throughout the hay, then you would be okay. And I think really going back to it is look at the maturity. Look at how many stems are there. If you're able to take a handful of it, I always say take a handful, ball it up in your hands. Does it hurt?
Oh.
The stems are going to hurt,
right.
you know, and you're not going to be able to squeeze it or make a, you know, a ball out
yeah.
of it because it's going to be pokey
yeah.
and it's really going to hurt your hands. That's going to be lower quality. But if you can do that and it's nice and soft and you don't feel anything poking you, that's going to be more immature. It's going to have more leaves. It's going to be higher in quality. And again, it doesn't matter what the color is.
Right.
You know, typically leaves might be a little greener than stems. But again, I wouldn't trust that alone. I would really look at the leaf to stem ratio and the maturity content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can also smell it. Use your nose.
Yeah.
That's always good. You know, you might not be able to really see either some mold or some dust in it. But if you smell it, it should smell like fresh green. Yeah, it should smell nice.
Yeah.
And I also want to mention, too, that I might not have mentioned earlier, I don't care how good anyone thinks they are, even if it's a hay farmer that's been doing it for 50 years, they're not going to be able to tell you how much non-structural carbohydrate is in them. They might
right.
be able to guess in terms of the protein or maybe some of the other nutrients, but non-structural carbohydrate content, as I mentioned, is very weather and sunlight dependent. So
okay.
even me, I've been to farms where they've got 5 different hays laid out in front of me. And they're like, well, we're feeding that one and it's stemmy and brown. And we're giving that one to the little insulin resistant pony. And then I go and test them all. And it finds out that another one is way lower than what they would have expected. And
right.
that one might not be on the high side, but it's on the moderate side.
Yeah.
So there's another plug for getting your hay tested.
Yeah.
If you're really concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I love that tip about balling the hay up and seeing how it feels. I haven't thought about doing that, but that's a great tip. Carrie Williams, thanks so much for your insight and for sharing your expertise on feeding horses.
No problem. Thank you so much. It's been fun.
That's it for today's episode of Feeding Horses, sponsored by Tribute. I'd like to thank Dr. Carrie Williams for joining me. And now, go spend time with your horse.